Golf Smarter number 116 for March 4, 2008.
SmarterPodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.
Tempo, speed, and grip pressure with Dr. David Wright.
This is Golf Smarter. Each week we tap the best minds in golf to help lower your scores with tips, drills, insights, and advice. In conversation with course pros, architects, authors, players, teaching gurus, and coaches, here's your host, Fred Green.
Welcome and thanks for joining us for another episode of the Golf Smarter podcast. When we launched the Golf Smarter blog a few months back, I had hopes that it could become like a community event. Golf Smarter listeners from all over the world could exchange their ideas about our guests and the topics that could be discussed. Well, the past week, there have been a couple of blog entries and comments that I hope you've noticed. First of all, did you see that outrageous golf photo that was taken by my friend? Well, the subject of the photo wrote in to explain on the blog why he was practicing where he was. You got to check that one out. Also, Guy, that's really his online name, Guy, wrote a question about a golf ball selection in the blog entry from our last episode of Golf Better. And if you're interested in picking a new ball, the selection was answered by Kenny. All this is to say that if you have a question for me, Kenny, or anyone else who's part of the Golf Smarter team, you have options. Either the Ask Kenny, Ask the Experts, or Hey Fred tabs at GolfSmarterPodcast.com and GolfSmarterTips.com, or become part of the community discussion on the Golf Smarter blog. Well, we have two guests joining us today, and here's why. I recently received a press release about a new product hitting the market called ShotWatch. Even though Golf Smarter has been accused of being a long ad for the people I interview, I say, yeah, so. For me, the idea is to get as much information about new ways and old ways at approaching golf as we possibly can. If someone's got a new product, who's to say it's not a great product? They believe it is, so why not discuss it with them? Also, if we find ways to get you a discount or a free product, then we all win, right? Anyway, Ted Caldwell is the inventor of ShotWatch, and after talking with him at length, I thought it would be worth the conversation. But the day we were to record, I received another press release saying that PGA professional and top 100 teacher Dr. David Wright had endorsed this new product. Well, to me, that's a much more compelling conversation. Let's get a high-level instructor to talk about improving our practice sessions, and then we can see why he liked the product. Welcome, David.
Well, thanks, Fred.
Welcome, Ted.
Hello. Thank you, Fred.
And clearly we have Ted is calling via Skype, and we have David on his cell phone. We appreciate having both of you here. And let's start with you, David. I want to talk about your teachings both at USC and with the Right Balance Golf Schools and what amateurs seem to be missing when they're practicing and how something like we're going to be talking about ShotWatch may be able to help. But let's talk about what amateurs should be concentrating on while they're practicing.
Well, most amateurs will go to the range and pick up 50 to 100 balls, put them down, and start swinging what we call a rake and hit. They'll rake one ball over and make a swing and then rake another over. And through that 100 balls, they'll find something that works in that moment, and they'll keep repeating it. And that's not the way players play golf. They stand behind the ball, the average player, your better players, visually draw a line from their ball to a precise target, and then walk into and hit that shot. And we call that their pre-swing routine. And if you want to play the way you practice, you should be practicing on, once you've warmed up, once you have maybe hit your wedges on, and work through the bag a little bit, even up to driver, then you really do need to, once you feel your tempo, once you get loose, you want to start to walk behind the ball, pick a target, draw a line to that target, and stay as visual as you can. The other thing the average golfer does is they think too much when they practice.
Do you find that they think too much when they practice, or they think too much for every shot?
Both. The golfers are very mechanical. Most golfers are technicians. Golf is a very visual game, and what they should be focused on is a feel. If the golfers are struggling, and all the golfers I've worked with from the not the beginner, but say the 30 to 35 index player, down to the scratch golfer or even the pro will come out, and one of the easy way to put them back on track is say, well, stand next to the ball. I want you to start to make practice swings and tell me when you feel the best swing you've ever made. You know what your best swing feels like? Tell me when you do that, and they'll make four or five swings invariably, and they'll say, okay, that's it. I say, okay, I want you to feel that swing twice. Then without a target, step into the ball, and your only focus should be the total feeling of that swing, and repeat it. I did that as recently as our home event here for the USC women's team on Tuesday afternoon with one of our better players who was struggling on the course. And within 5 minutes, your best players, all players know what their best swing feels like. And as a segue to the shot watch, one of the things that you find with these players in practice, when they start to struggle, they start to think. And as they start to think, their tempo changes. As tempo changes, the grip pressure changes, and it goes sideways, and it gets worse and worse and worse. You see an awful lot, you can see a lot of frustrated golfers on the range. So combining the shot watch with what I just said, which I did, on Tuesday, then not only do you start to see changes in tempo, but you see the changes in grip pressure, and all of a sudden the players are back on track.
You must, having the advantage of working with young people on a college level, but there are so many golfers. I receive emails lots of time from people saying, yeah, I just picked up the game in my 40s or my 50s. And there must be a vast difference on the mental approach in practice between the two. Do you find that true?
Well, you know, yes and no. You'll find players who are we take our personalities to the golf course. If you're an engineer, if you're an accountant, you're going to be analyzing your golf swing while you're out there, no matter what level you're playing. Tom Kite's a great example of a player who was a very technical player when he plays. You've got a lot of pros who are technicians, and then you have your pros. One of my students actually attended SC, Kevin Stadler, and Kev knows nothing about the golf swing, doesn't want to know anything about the golf swing. Kevin is very visual. He'll just say, well, I just want to see lines. He knows when he draws a line from his ball to a target, if it doesn't look like it's going there, that his setup is off. And that's another aspect of golf, and I say it's very visual. People who are very visual, your artists, your architects, your musicians are actually quite visual and very feeling. People with that style are honestly much easier to teach than your technicians. Your technicians get it very quickly, but to try and get them away from their analysis and into being visual is it's a big transition. If you think on the golf course, if you work on mechanics on the practice range, you're going to take that to the golf course. Probably one of the best examples I can give you, I learned in undergraduate school many years ago at a course in neurophysiology, and the instructor said, sign your name on the top of a piece of paper. And then he said, okay, without thinking about anything other than what your signature looks like, I want you to look at every horizontal line, every vertical line, every ellipse. I want you to copy your signature. Look back and forth, make sure it looks exactly the same. Now, our swing signature is just the same. And when you do that exercise and then you try to copy your signature, you see an immediate deterioration in performance. You can see it looks like you're back in elementary school again. And that's exactly what it is like. You have a swing signature, and everybody has their own signature, no matter what level they play. And if they try and think of the pieces, you get an immediate degradation in performance.
Well, like everybody's signature is unique, I would imagine that everybody's swing is unique. And that may be, or is that, an issue for golf instructors who try to create the perfect swing?
Absolutely. This is a personal opinion now, and I'm going to be stepping on a few toes. But
that's okay. It's just us.
Right now it is, Fred. When you put Tiger Woods' swing on video and you show somebody else their swing compared to his, if their height is not the same, there are certain biomechanical things you want to be looking at, anatomical things you want to be looking at. Everybody's stance width is different. Everybody's angle of power at the top is different. That's what all the research is showing. So trying to emulate someone that doesn't fit your body style, your body type, or your height, or your angles of power is, to me, it's a futile pursuit. That's my opinion.
And that's absolutely fascinating. I recently did a video lesson with somebody who showed me not the swing-to-swing comparison, but showed me position and setup.
Mm-hmm.
And then also showed, you know, at the top of the swing compared to Tiger. And
yep.
I was like, oh, okay, well, now I see where my problems are. Now, is that different showing, just say, you know, your setup showing that? Because Tiger is, I guess technically, he's about as close to perfection as you'd want to achieve. Or is he?
Well, at the top of the golf swing, I think there is an arm plane, there is a shaft plane, those kinds of things. But the angle of the forearm to the ground changes for all of us. And that's the angle I'm talking about. Everybody has their position of power, and biomechanically it changes. When you're when you're out of that position or you're out of balance, your grip pressure changes. So those are factors that we can easily follow. But to answer your question, everybody's going to be different. And to try and put a club in position, in my teaching, I work primarily on setup and then motion. I don't talk about, we look at the sequence of motion. And if a player is in the right setup with a good grip, in balance, good posture, and they make the motion, their arm plane, left arm plane, is going to be pretty similar through swings, but the angle of their right forearm to the ground is going to be different. The position of the club at the top is going to be a little different, depending on the individual, depending on how tall they are, depending on their stance width, depending on a number of different things.
How would you respond to a statement like, it's not about the contact, it's more about the consistency of the swing? It's the full swing, and the ball just happens to be in the middle of that swing.
Well, I think as long as that contact is good,
okay.
I can have a consistent golf swing and poor contact, but consistency of the swing, there's no question. And a good example of that is Jim Furyk. Talk about a golf swing that you would not want to teach someone, but the consistency is there.
Yeah.
And he performs beautifully. And the last thing you'd want to do is make a change in Jim Furyk's golf swing.
Right. He would disappear for a number of years.
Exactly,
which I think
is what, you know, when you talk about body, there are, I think, a lot of reasons David Duval disappeared, but when he was heavier, when his weight was a little heavier, he was playing really well. As soon as he changed his body, he lost his setup. That's my belief.
Very interesting. And so let's now get to Ted's in here dying going, I want to talk about shot watch.
What are you guys doing?
I want to talk about shot watch.
I've had the pleasure of knowing David for over 10 years, and he never ceases to amaze me. He's just this huge compendium of information and brings to so many different subjects and disciplines to bear on golf and body mechanics. It's just, I could listen to David for hours. So I've been quite comfortable sitting here.
Thank you.
Quietly.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. Well, I promise we'll get to it. Okay.
All right. Okay.
But all right. Let's bring in Shot Watch. I'm sure that you are approached on a regular basis by people who have developed new swing aids, new tools, new gimmicks, and new gadgets. We'll get into the details of what ShotWatch can do for an amateur. David, let's get into you and why it is that you have chosen to, if I may use the word, endorse this product.
Well, you know what's interesting is Ted says he's known me for 10 years. And there, I have a dear friend who's his name is Jim Suddy. Jim teaches a lot of pros on tour, from Lauren Roberts to Gary Hallberg. He has quite a stable of pros. And about 15 years ago, he and I talked to Carol Mann. Now, Carol Mann won the U.S. Open years ago, and we were at the Woodlands in Houston, Texas, talking about the importance of grip pressure. And we had talked about, and we knew an electrical engineer, and we chatted with him about how can we start to measure grip pressure. Now, again, this is 15 years ago. And Ted's heard this story. When I first met him, I told him the story, but Carol Mann said that Manuel Delatorre, he's in the World Golf Hall of Fame now through Golf Magazine, and she was her instructor, and we were chatting with Carol, and she said, you know, Manuel used to work on grip pressure with me day after day after day. And so that's how important it is. And we knew it was important. And the downside was when we talked to the electrical engineer and he called us back after a month or so, he said, guys, you're looking at a $1 million R&D project. And we just looked at each other and said, let's go back to teaching and just keep talking to players about how important grip pressure is. Sam Snead talked about it in his books about trying to feel the same pressure in the downswing he did in the backswing, and that was one of his big swing keys. Nicholas talks about it. So everybody in the instruction community is acutely aware of how important grip pressure is. So when I met Ted 10 years ago, where I was teaching at a club close to his home, he came in, and so we chatted, and I said, Ted, this is a winner. There's no question. And that was, at that time, the design was in a golf glove. And I saw Ted was a year or two or three later. We kept continued to communicate, but we came back with a shot watch. There are so many applications. I use it, as I said, feeling the golf swing. There's another area of importance that hits amateurs and pros alike, especially the young college players. They'd be going out for the first time. When we are nervous, anxious, apprehensive, and when you go out to play in a tournament golf, or you take your average amateur who's teeing it up in the company tournament, who is concerned about how they're going to perform, and their focus is future, you get an increase in heart rate, you get an increase in blood pressure, you get an increase in muscle tension, they begin to move faster, walk faster around the ball in practice, and they swing faster. Tempo is compromised, and as that happens, the grip pressure changes. So shot watch, it's not only good for looking at physically how can we teach players grip pressure, we can give them some great feedback on what happens, you know, when you are wound up, when you are keyed up as you go out to practice, and you're ready to go play. It's not just a training strategy, it's a great warm-up strategy. And when you go out to play on the golf course, and that's where you really want to begin to use it as well, it's a venue when you're practicing on the course and, say, playing a practice round, you can start to, under the conditions of tournament player and the conditions that may produce anxiety in some players, begin to track, okay, where am I getting these changes? And you get some great feedback that you don't have otherwise. Ted's referred to it as a biofeedback mechanism, and it's no closer. I've worked with EMG and temperature training many, many years ago. It's tremendous in biofeedback, but in the golf swing, when you're able to measure tempo and hand speed and pressure all at once, then you've got... I think Ted has a winner. That's to a very long-winded question, or a long-winded answer to a very short question, but there are multiple reasons why I feel so strongly about it. I think it's just a tremendous product.
Well, I promise to keep my questions short then.
I'll try and lengthen my answers then, Fred.
Well, you know, I've been very lucky with this program that we've produced well over 100 shows now, and I've talked to a lot of instructors, and really the guiding thing behind this program is the fact that I get free lessons on the phone. This is very fun for me. And frequently we'll discuss the grip, but infrequently is grip pressure brought up. And mm-hmm. the fact that there's more than just grip pressure brought into this, and you must be very excited that Ted went ahead and done the $1 million of R&D on this one.
Exactly.
Hopefully it's not out of your pocket,
and,
Ted.
Yes, and counting.
Oh, my. Yeah. But it's amazing that if grip pressure is that important, why it's not brought up by more instructors, and maybe it's because it can't be measured or this point.
Yes, that is precisely the case. And just to give you a little bit of background on the technology.
Okay, Ted, we'll let you speak.
Thank you. a little bit of background on the technology. As David alluded to, when we first met 10 years ago and I came to him with this glove idea, we were using pneumatic bladders, latex rubber bladders built inside a glove that went into a pressure sensor device, and it was the idea behind it was quite sound, but the fabrication proved to be really, really faulty. And so from there, we did a lot of research. My colleagues at the university were all university affiliated that worked on this project. We combed the field and found a pressure sensor that was being used in surgical instruments, so that when a doc or a cutter in the surgical theater operating room is pressing down too tightly on his instrumentation, a little signal, either a light or a buzzer or something, will go off, signaling the doc that he needs to back off on the pressure, that same. Little sensor is the one that we built into our watch, into the shot watch, so that it's highly discriminating with respect to degrees of pressure. Now, in the active arm for the right-handed golfer on the left arm, very, very subtle changes in grip pressure can be sensed at or near the pulse point of the wrist. When the fingers press up against the club handle, the shot watch will discriminate very, very subtle changes. We have the ability in the shot watch to monitor each swing when the ball is hit straight and far, which is the objective. That's the grip pressure that we try to repeat. And so with the instrument, we just push the save button, or comparable to pushing a save button, and that information, that data, is put into the memory bank of the watch, and that each subsequent swing will subsequent grip pressure can be compared to the grip pressure saved in the memory, and the differences can be noted. Or if the golfer repeats the same swing with the same grip pressure, you get an attaboy. It's just that's the objective, and you can monitor grip pressure alone or monitor the swing speed and the tempo and the grip pressure all at the same time with instant feedback and a digital readout on each one of those variables.
And instant feedback is part of this generation's demand.
Yes, indeed. No deferred gratification in this generation.
None whatsoever. And this generation of golfers is probably even more so.
Yes.
Well, in learning, immediate feedback is so critical.
Yeah. So, as from an instructor's approach, the data that you can gather on each swing is, I would think, invaluable, but then that it can be applied to the next level where the instructor doesn't have to be there, that the amateur can take this out on their own to the driving range and get this information and learn from it.
Well, no question. And, I imagine if every instructor you talk to, at one time or another, and more than one time in a lesson, they'll say to a student, how'd that feel? They're asking a very subjective question on the shot watch. Can I look at your wrist? Becomes the question now.
Yes.
Let me see the watch. Let's see what we have.
Yeah, you got a digital readout on that very feeling.
Exactly.
And that's kind of the rationale for a lot of the things that we designed into here is the idea that we want to reduce the amount of thinking that goes into it. I mean, that the idea is to get muscle memory operating, rather than having the interface with the mind, questioning the muscle, and then going through that analysis of the paralysis of analysis, you know. And so we, you know, with the instant feedback, we just you know, get a digital readout on those very things that normally the mind might try to compute. You know, here you, as was said, just look at the wrist and get the number.
Well, I really like to establish this now. We may not have mentioned the fact that Dr. David Wright is been named a top 100 instructor by Golf Magazine, a PGA professional, and his golf school, the Wright Balance Golf School, is also a top-ranked golf school in the country. But what about you, Ted? Briefly, if you can share with us where you came to this product, how you got there. You didn't come from the PGA side, did you?
No, not at all. In fact, I'm really a rank amateur at golf. The genesis of this product was actually tennis. I was hitting with a teaching pro down at the tennis court, and I'm hitting forehands down the line. He called me up to the net and said, "Let me see your grip." He pointed out that my grip was, I was holding on to the racket more with my ring finger and the little finger. He says, grip the racket further up toward the throat. And I did that and went back and started to hit forehands down the line again. And I was hitting the paint every time. And I thought, my God, if, you know, something like as simple as that, you know, where a slight alteration in the way I was doing things, because I've been doing it, you know, that way forever, if I change it very, very slightly. And then I thought, there's got to be a way to automate that, you know. And from that, I was taking a few golf lessons at the time. And I thought, wow, this is the way to approach this grip idea. Because as David pointed out, when it's not just a mental case for me, when I'm off balance, when I'm swinging a golf club and I'm slightly off balance, I can see from the digital readout on my grip pressure that as my balance changes, my grip pressure changes sometimes dramatically, you know, an order of magnitude difference, and it's almost an involuntary reaction that our grip pressure changes as we get off balance, especially in something dynamic like a golf swing.
So the primary motivation behind this was grip pressure, and you added tempo and speed as bonuses.
That's right. Yeah, the grip pressure was the motivation for it. With the technology available with accelerometers, we have a current generation accelerometer in the shot watch that does both speed and tempo, and that was put onto the same PC board and run through the same microprocessor as our pressure sensor, which was adopted from the surgical instrumentation that I mentioned earlier.
David, do you have something to add?
No, I was just going to say, I mean, when you look at grip pressure, I've done a good bit of research with the Curl and Job group and participate. Actually, I've done research in Frank Job's lab, in the biomechanics lab, but I also participated this year in a study where they put needle electrodes in your forearm to measure muscle activity and looking at golfer's elbow. And Ted has met the physicians involved. Mm-hmm. And down the road, I mean, as we move ahead, my belief is you're going to find that shot watch is going to be tied very closely to it. Because in chatting with the principal investigators, the orthopedic surgeons involved, then there's no question. That's exactly, when you look at grip pressure and the muscle activity in the forearm resulting in golfer's elbow, they're looking at grip pressure at impact in particular, or and with this continued change in pressure, a golfer's elbow will evolve. And I believe as we get this back in the lab, I think that's what we're going to be looking at. So, again, it's not it's a multifaceted tool. It's not just about you can look at it mentally in terms of an expression or a measurement of how much arousal are we seeing as we move out to the first tee or we move to the practice range. A great teaching tool in terms of getting consistency in golf swing and tempo and speed. and grip pressure and how all those are tied together, but also are we looking at some injury prevention? And I believe very strongly we are. When you start to look at grip pressure and pressure changes over time, golfer's elbow, tennis elbow, those are the kinds of things that Chalk Watch is going to be invaluable for.
Well, yeah. And as I brought up earlier about asking about golfers who get started in their 30s, 40s, and 50s who don't necessarily have the right approach from the beginning, this could be invaluable in that sense of avoiding pain. And
exactly.
That's a regular part of our life these days, is avoiding pain, I would think.
Yes, it is. And just to elaborate one, very, very briefly, the consistency idea, it's often a criticism of a lot of teaching devices that, that they reinforce, or the consistency approach reinforces bad habits and unhealthy habits in terms of injury and things like that. The Shot Watch tries not to do that, because the measure of what it encourages the golfer to do is to simply consistently repeat the thing that the swing that gives the best results. And if it's if it's reinforcing an injury producing thing, you wipe the memory clean in the instrument, and you start and you put a different set of benchmarks in there that will work to reinforcing healthy, happy shots.
I want to comment, because I know based on emails that I receive that the age range in our listeners varies greatly. And to those of you who have not hit 40 yet and are sitting listening to us and saying, oh, just man up already, so you have a little pain, big deal, you'll be over it. Once you hit 40, folks, it doesn't go away so easily. And the
true.
Pain lingers way too long, and you get cranky, and everyone around you doesn't like you. So now that we've made that statement, so we've talked a lot about what ShotWatch is, what it does, but as we tighten up on our time here, Ted, tell me, what is ShotWatch physically?
Well,
I mean, what is the consumer going to get a chance to hold, to do, to use? Tell us that.
Okay, the Shot Watch is a very attractively designed. We have an industrial designer that came up with the design for the man's model. We'll have a woman's model out later on in the spring, which is a similar design but much smaller and a little more colorful. It looks like a sport watch. It's got three different modes. It will measure simultaneously grip pressure, tempo, and hand speed. Now, hand speed as opposed to club speed. One of the things that a criticism that I believe unjustifiably is made at the Shot Watch is that the data that the Shot Watch delivers is different than that which will be delivered from a golf simulator or a laser radar based instrument. Well, that's perfectly understandable. For instance, the Shot Watch is worn on the wrist, and so we're measuring hand speed. We're not measuring club head speed. The club head's going to pass through a laser beam 7 or 8 feet from the 6 or 7 feet from the golfer's arm. So because of the difference in arc and torque and so on and so forth, we're going to get a different speed reading than the simulator will give. Similarly, with the tempo reading, the Shot Watch is activated perpendicular to the ground, because that's where the wrist is at the start of the swing. With the first motion, there's a very, very slight lag from the time the watch is armed until the contact with the ball. That's our tempo measurement from takeaway to contact with the ball. Because there's a slight lag, when we're pulling away, it's probably somewhere in the neighborhood of a tenth of a second. So if we have a jugs gun or some kind of radar device and we're calibrating with a Shot Watch, there's probably a tenth of a second difference between the two. Now, does that really matter? Probably not, because what the Shot Watch is trying to do, and what it does, I think, very successfully, is that it builds in, it gets the user to repeat the swing that gives the best result, so that It's the relative swing. It's the relative grip pressure, and it's the relative tempo that becomes important. So the data that's displayed on the shot watch is the data that needs to be repeated, rather than some external measuring device that we're trying to calibrate with.
And let me interrupt for a second and ask you, David, about, you know, we don't hear about hand speed. We hear about club speed all the time.
Right.
Is there a value in knowing hand speed versus club speed?
Well, as Ted was saying, consistency is the issue. If you look at the centrifugal force produced, you're going to have 3 points of measurement. And the best analogy I can give you would be, if you think of a group of ice skaters in a rink holding hands and starting to skate in a circle, the internal skater is barely moving. The outside skater is really flying. So when you can look at club head speed, that's the club head speed. If you looked at the skater that's maybe two-thirds of the way in, you're probably going to be looking at hand speed there. And I think you're looking at apples and apples, because speed is speed. Club head lag, or the shaft lag as you're coming in, and the final speed of the club head at impact is going to be generated. The hand speed being a constant and having consistent hand speed is the key. It's not so much, it used to be looked at that club head speed was it. Well, it isn't. People who have their portable radar that gives them club head speed, and their goal to get with a driver, I know years ago it used to be your average PGA Tour player driver was about 105. That was at Callaway in the early 90s, 105 club head speed. Now we look at ball speed, we look at spin rate, we look at shaft. We're looking at so many variables that club head speed is kind of just, well, it's just one of many, and it is not as an important measure as ball speed and spin off the club face. So when people think about club, I think the general belief is, well, if I can generate more club head speed, I can hit the ball further. Not true. Not true. You have to look at shaft. You have to look at ball. You have to look at ball speed, spin rate. You have so many variables. Hand speed is going to be a constant, no matter what those other variables look like. So back to the word consistency, and that's what you're really looking for here.
I frequently get questions about off-season training aids, and I can imagine that this, you don't need to be out on a driving range. You could be hitting into a net and still, or just swinging and not hitting the ball and get feedback.
Making practice swings.
Yeah.
Feeling which you could be making practice swings, which is if your garage is tall enough and your spouse will allow it, you can go out in the garage and work the shot watch. Training is so important, and repetition is where learning occurs. And the more repetition you have, then just putting the ball in the way.
Awesome. All right.
Yeah,
so,
and it helps, of course, if you start when you're 3 or 4 years old, like like a few of the pros.
We end each show with a quote that is submitted by our listeners, and somebody wrote in once and said, "I asked a friend of mine, what's the best way to become a good golfer?" And he said, "Start when you're 6."
Yeah, or earlier.
Exactly. Okay. So Ted, we've got to get down to this now. You know, we've heard all about it and the value and all these things. How much?
Okay.
Come on, now we got to talk about price.
Okay, dollars and cents. The suggested retail price is $295.
Well, that's not that bad.
No, it's a steal.
Well, no, comparatively to other training aids and things, that's you know, the price point is reasonable compared to everything else.
Well, thank you. Yes, and there are other devices on the market. I don't believe that there's any that combine the three measurements that we're dealing with in an instant feedback way in an attractive package.
Now you're doing marketing. All right. So,
when you look at the cost of a golf lesson or a series of lessons, shot watch pretty quickly.
Oh, there you go. Okay. Yeah. So, $295. And if you don't mind, we give one of them away here on the Golf Smarter podcast?
Oh, yes. I'd be very pleased to offer one for your listeners.
Thank you. All right. So then what we'll do is if you want to win a shot watch valued at $295, why don't you go to golfsmarterpodcast.com and click on the word contest and select shot watch. And entries will let's do this over the month of March. And at the end of the month, we'll select a winner. And as disclosure, let the people who enter the contest, you will be ending up on the mailing list for the people at ShotWatch, so you can hear about updates and things like that. Actually, Ted and I spoke about this earlier, and Ted was incredibly generous to offer to Golf Smarter listeners only, and your friends, so membership has its privileges. As a Golf Smarter listener, if you go to shotwatch.com/golfsmarter, you will receive a discount if you'd like to purchase a ShotWatch. And Ted, you said that $249 for the Golf Smarter listeners.
That's right. That's right, Fred. And we're very pleased to do that for your audience.
Yeah, well, thank you. That's incredibly generous, and we appreciate it very much. So not only have you have a chance to win one, and you know what your chances are like of winning things. It's like a hole-in-one. You just don't know what's going to happen. If you'd like to buy one for yourself, because you know this is going to help you, because I think David has explained how it really can help you, you can purchase one for yourself at a discounted rate with a very generous discount indeed. Dr. David Wright of the Wright Balance Golf Schools, thank you so much for coming on and sharing not only the explanation but your expertise on this and how it can help. And Ted Caldwell, CEO and inventor of the Shot Watch. Thank you both very much.
Thank you, Fred. It's my pleasure.
Yes, indeed. Thanks so much, Fred.
Okay, I know you've been waiting for nearly a month for this announcement, and we're going to make it. Todd Soans has returned to give away a putter. Hey, Todd, how are you?
Very good, Fred. How are you?
I'm doing fine, thank you. One more time, if you can tell us a little bit about the Couture putter.
The whole idea behind Couture Golf is that, and the word Couture stands for custom fit and high quality, the highest quality in the industry. And so that's why I named the company Couture Golf. As a golf professional, I'm one of the top, ranked as one of the top 50 instructors in the country by Golf Digest. And so, you know, my whole career is built around getting results with people. And basically what happens in the industry is most people go to the shelf, you know, they get led, you know, to the retail store by watching golf on TV, and they see a putter in a player's hand, a tour player's hand. And so they just go buy that putter off the shelf. And the misconception there that people miss is that putter in that tour player's hand has been custom fit for that player. You know, they don't play with putters off the shelf, and yet amateurs are expected to. So I developed Couture Golf so basically amateurs could get treated like tour players and truly get a putter that's designed for them and fit for their body in the right length and in the right swing weight. Another real problem in the industry is that when companies put putters on shelves, they have a standard putter of 35 inches. Well, when they cut a putter at 34, 33, you know, you think you're buying the right length. Well, you're actually buying the right length, but it could be at the wrong weight because they don't change the head weight. So, you know, we're able to make, you know, high-quality milled putters in different weights, different lengths, customized to the person. So it really works great.
That's phenomenal. Well, there's clearly a lot of interest because over the last few weeks, we've been asking people to enter to win a Couture putter, and we have received 472 entries. I know you're happy about that, but I know there are 471 people that are not happy about that because they wanted to make it about 6 entries, so they had a better chance of winning. But what we're going to do is I've sorted the names. I've created a spreadsheet here of all the entries, and I've sorted the names randomly, and I'm going to let you select, and our listeners know the drill here, I'm going to let you select a number between 1 and 472, and you can select number 472, and that will be the winner of a custom-fit Couture putter.
So number 472 right now is really hoping I say that, but, you know, I'm going to go ahead and go with 238.
And why?
Because that's the first one that came to my mind.
Okay. Well, then Let's go back over here. And number 238 is a winner in New Mexico, at Rio Rancho, New Mexico, and it's a woman, Catherine Schutz of Rio Rancho, New Mexico, has just won a custom-fit Couture putter. Congratulations.
Well, Congratulations, Catherine. That'll be great.
Yeah, you're going to love it. Now, Todd, I was pounding you before we got online here because clearly there's people who are interested in this putter. I know that I am, especially after watching that video. So you've been generous enough to offer our listeners a discount if they'd like to purchase a custom-fit Couture putter. And
yes.
Thank you very much. So here's the deal. If you go to couturegolf.com, that's C-O-U-T-O-U-R golf.com, and you go to purchase online, all you have to do is enter the information that's required, including your height and your measurements, whatever it asks for you there, and then it'll ask you for a referral code. And when you get to that section, put in Golf Smarter in the referral code section, and you will receive a 10% discount, which is the equivalent of $25 off your putter. That is a very generous offer. So again, couturegolf.com, referral code Golf Smarter, and receive a 10% discount. Todd, thanks a lot. I really appreciate it.
I'm really glad to do it. And you might put in there, too, just that you know, the spelling of Couture is C-O-U-T-O-U-R golf.com.
Thank you very much. Can't repeat it.
Yeah,
can't repeat it enough times. All right, well, now, before I let you go, I want a putting tip for the week.
Here's I think, one of the most important things in putting that, you know, we see that people do through impact that really cause a problem. I think one of the best things you do, watch Tiger Woods and watch after he hits a putt, his head and his body stays down and basically motionless. And therefore, the putter finishes lower to the ground. I think one of the most common mistakes that we see in amateurs is that as they strike the golf ball, they literally fall backwards. Their head comes up and back. And so they hit up on the putt, and the blade opens up, and that's why more people than not cut their putt versus hit a solid putt. So I really work hard on trying to get it sounds, it's nothing new, but it's really important, and people still come up and out of their putt. So, you know, if you can, my rule with my students is that they can't move their body unless the putter stops moving first. And if you learn just to hold your body in position until the putter stops moving, you're going to hit a lot more solid putts.
Fabulous. Todd, great. Thanks so much for your generosity. And everyone, jump on that, couturegolf.com. And the referral code is Golf Smarter, and you'll get 10% off a brand new putter. Boy. Thanks, Todd.
All right, Fred, take care. Have a good day.
Thank you very much. Wow, a lot to absorb today, and as always, new stuff to win. Gotta love that. Thanks again to Dr. David Wright and Ted Caldwell. Go to shotwatch.com/golfsmarter and get your discount. The discount page on the site is up and ready to go. Also, enter to win a ShotWatch by clicking on the contest tab at golfsmarterpodcast.com. While you're there, check out the other things that we have to give away, and you need to enter each time, please. Deadline for entry for the ShotWatch is Friday, March 28th, 2008. We'll announce the winner on the episode of April 1st. No kidding. That was bad. This week's closing quote comes from Jeff Lindholm of Metairie, Louisiana. The quote comes out of quotegarden.com, and it was Arnold Palmer who once said, "I have a tip that will take 5 strokes off anyone's golf game. It's called an eraser." If you have any questions, comments, quotes, or requests, please click on the Hey Fred button at golfsmarterpodcast.com.
Hi, this is Michael Anthony inviting you to join me on the Golf Smarter Tips podcast. Each week, I'll provide you with tips and insights on how you can lower your score using the Mental Keys unique mental training program. Are you having trouble taking your practice game to the golf course or making those pressure shots? Tune in and I'll show you how to improve your mental game and lower your scores.
Golf Smarter Tips podcast is free on iTunes or at golfsmartertips.com.